So, Peter, we've just finished recording episode 8 of the podcast with Jonathan Woodward, Head of Revenues at Birmingham City Council.
Yeah.
But again, we always say this really, really interesting conversation. The first local authority representative we've had. I'm sure the listeners will find that as interesting and fascinating as what we did.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Some really good insight, I think, into what's happening in a local authority. I mean, it's the largest local authority, not only in the UK, but in Europe as well, as I think you mentioned at the beginning of the intro for Jonathan. I'll pinch that. Yeah, some really interesting insights into the challenges they've got and why certain things happen. At the end, I posed that, what one thing would you change, if I can say it properly? And the answer he gave to that, which was, I thought, was absolutely fascinating. And I, for one, think he's right on the money.
I agree. And, I mean, there wasn't just one thing. There was a few things.
All
of it perfect sense.
Yeah.
This might be a little bit longer than the normal podcast, but I would encourage people to get the end, because there's a really interesting story that Jonathan tells about a certain Mr. Rishi Sunak as well, which is worth getting the end for, I think.
Oh, nothing like a teaser, eh? Right, well, let's crack on. Should we roll titles?
Let's roll the titles.
Let's do it.
The Dead Tech Podcast with Peters and Lee.
No, it's not Peters and Lee, it's Peter and Lee.
I've heard Rishi Sunak's an avid listener of the podcast. He might be listening.
Well, thank you for that. That's brightened up my day.
You know, I actually met him. Yeah, 3 years ago.
It's a cross between Groucho Marx and something else. I'm not sure what.
There were two things that struck me. He was absolutely pinchar, and he was absolutely ripped as well.
Hello and welcome to episode 8 of Trustfolio's Debt Tech Podcast, which, as usual, I'm co-hosting with my colleague Peter Walwick. Hi, Peter.
Hi there. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. And delighted to introduce our guest this week, who is Jonathan Woodward from Birmingham City Council. Birmingham City Council is the largest local authority in Europe, I understand, not just the UK, with over 1 million customers or residents, however you describe them. So we'll talk to Jonathan a little bit more about that. So, Jonathan, really appreciate you joining us. No doubt you're a busy man, but it's great to have you with us today. We normally kick off talking a little bit of football or rugby, but given you're a Newcastle fan and England's a bit crap at rugby at the minute, we'll probably give those a miss. Although I have just found out you're doing the coast-to-coast later this year. So, keen cyclist, I assume?
Yeah. I've always enjoyed my cycling. I started off cycling just to supplement being fit for playing squash. Played as a youngster for the county and the region, and I play for a local club in Northwest County. So that was the cycling was always to keep myself sharp and fit. However, it's kind of taken over as age has caught up with me. Not quite the force on the squash court I used to be.
After adapting, you get a bit older, don't you? The sports side of things.
Yeah.
Peter, a cyclist. Used to
my mountain bike's in the back there. Yes, there you go. And I have got a little bit older. I'm probably a bit older than you, actually, Jonathan. And yes, you're right. You carry on with the cycling to try and keep fit.
A bit older. Yeah. A little bit older. So we're all keen cyclists, and there's one or two football and rugby, but yeah, the cyclists, who knows, we'll get a Trustfolio Birmingham City Council bike riding at some point.
I was going to say, I did actually suggest they should do, because there is an IRRV golf day at the IRRV Telford Conference, and as someone who's absolutely shocking at golf, I did suggest that instead they should maybe do a some sort of ride, sportif.
Yes.
There you go.
Anyone's interested in that, get in touch with me.
Yeah, sounds good.
Anyone from the IRRV listening? Yeah, we're up for, well, there's two or three who'd sign up to a ride, pretty much, I would imagine. Yeah, up for that, definitely. So, Jonathan, you're Head of Revenues at Birmingham City Council. What I was going to do is just before we get into the sort of the discussion, ask you to tell us a little bit about your role and remit within the council.
Yeah, so I joined Birmingham September 2017. So it's unbelievable, really, how time flies. And I joined at a point where the service was just being migrated back in from Capita. So initially, you know, part of my role was to, you know, kind of rebuild the revenue service that Birmingham had. We've got to the point now where, obviously, you know, well established, and I'm responsible for the billing and collection of council tax, business rates, and the numerous business improvement districts that we've got in Birmingham. So in numbers, what does that all equate to? Well, we've just gone through annual billing, and we've sent out just over half a million council tax and business rates bills and bid levy demands.
Wow.
Which is, you know, sort of boggles the mind when you, you think of the logistics, and it never ceases to amaze me what you know, half a million bills look like when you see it all there in envelopes ready to go. So that equates to about £960 million worth of income for Birmingham City Council. So that only, I say only, makes up a third of the income for BCC. So hugely important role that revenues has as a service for the authority. It is, as well as being responsible for the collection of cash, since COVID, it seems that I'm also responsible for distributing a huge amount of cash as well, be it in the form of COVID grants, energy rebate schemes, or helping to manage the household support funds that have been distributed via local authorities. And as of 2 weeks ago, we had another two energy rebate schemes that had been landed on us. So yeah, a lot of cash comes through the revenue service in Birmingham.
£1 billion. Wow, no pressure there then. That's a huge number.
Yeah, it is a huge number. You're right. It's no different to any other authority though, in terms of, I guess, relative importance. It's, we've perhaps just got, you know, an extra couple of zeros on the end.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we speak to lots of local authorities in various different parts of the business from a Trustfolio perspective, and I always sort of leave with the impression there's huge pressures on local authorities at the moment, and no doubt yourself, you've got some big challenges, targets to meet over the next 12 and 24 months beyond. In terms of your own objectives and targets, Jonathan, what would you say is your main priority over the course of this year?
I wish I could say we had one. We've got a number, and that's where the challenges lie. We've got some legacy collection issues as a result of COVID. So you know we're still chasing arrears. It's a bad time to be chasing arrears going into the, you know, we're in this cost of living crisis. In Birmingham, we can see the impact of that. I think there's a lot of support out there at the moment through various sort of, you know, rebate grants and support funds and, you know, council tax hardship funds that are probably masking some of the, you know, the real effects of that cost of living crisis, and you know we're kind of able to deal with it whilst all those support mechanisms are in place. What that holds for the future, you know, when they get withdrawn or scaled back, I think that's when we'll see the true extent of the impact of cost of living. So managing that is a huge challenge. It's a real difficult balancing act between, you know, recovering as much cash as we can to help with BCC's finances, and putting citizens first and doing what's right for them. I think you know, when I first joined Revenues, not at Birmingham, but working in local authority Revenues back in 2013, vulnerability, you know, not really a massive topic or high up on the agenda for local authorities. It was purely about, you know, getting cash in. Whereas now, you know, we've got a caring role, and we do want to do what's best by citizens. So balancing those acts is difficult in this day and age. So we've got obviously the monetary and the financial pressures. Just within Birmingham as an authority, we are looking, we've got some corporate initiatives that are high on the agenda. So there's a real move within the authority to be what's called best in class. And that's looking at every aspect of every service within the authority. Is it operating, you know, as efficiently as possible? You know, is it delivering the correct outcomes for citizens? And, you know, are we operating at, you know, a best in class level in comparison to other local authorities? So there's a massive review and program going on around that. in Birmingham, I mean, in Revenues, I think there are areas where, you know, we are best in class, and there are areas where, you know, we absolutely aren't, and it's looking at why we aren't and putting in place, you know, an action plan to get us there. So yeah, we've got some internal initiatives which are really high priorities.
Yeah, Jonathan, you mentioned vulnerable customers there and the need to engage with them slightly differently. I had a look at the Birmingham website, and it's really good, and your signpost and support options for vulnerable customers is really good. One of the things we've been reading more about, I suppose, just generally when we engage with the debt advice sector and those who are supporting vulnerable customers, is the need and the demand to engage digitally for these customers. So things like that, I think Birmingham are probably a bit further ahead on. I like the strapline as well, Be Birmingham, which I suppose links to your willingness to embrace different technologies, innovations. Can you just tell us a little bit more about that? Be Bold, Be Birmingham. What does that mean? What's behind it?
So the slogan Be Bold, Be Birmingham actually was born as part of the launch of the Commonwealth Games, which the city hosted really successfully. You know, I might add, it was a you know, being in the city during the Commonwealth Games was a great experience. But it was about showing that, you know, what the authority's vision is for the city, and, you know, we're looking to, you know, do things differently, you know, be innovative, you know push the boundaries. And that is a thread that is running throughout the authority and everything we do. So, you know, just in terms of you know, digital offerings, we started really to heavily embrace robotic process technology within the authority, and within Revenues we're a bit of a trailblazer in that respect. So it sounds very futuristic, but I can actually say we've got robots within Revenues who do some of the work for us. And these are automated processes which, you know, sit on a desktop, and you can physically see them working on our billing system. So we've got 11 of these robotic processes working at the minute. We've secured funding to actually employ an in-house developer to build as many processes as we can kind of think of to run, to really improve our efficiency and free up the officers to do the more of the, you know, the soft skills type.
Yeah.
So a lot of our billing processes, which is kind of like high volume, low complexity, is perfect for our robot to be to work on. So as an example, when there's a probate on a customer account, our robot can go off and search the probate registry to see if probate's been granted, and that saves a human officer having to do that. And that, and it can do it once a week, it can do it once a month, it can do it whenever we want. Another example of what our robots are doing: if a customer pays by direct debit and for whatever reason they cancel, our robot can pick up the cancellation reports, go into the system, and rebill them on cash. And it's a defined process, and we don't need an officer to do that. And like I say, that then frees our officers up to do more of the recovery type work, where it's about engaging in custom, it's engaging yeah. customers, you know, picking the phone up. So that's been a real success, and to be honest, in terms of complexity of processes, we're just at the tip of the iceberg. There are other authorities who are running RPA processes. A lot of those authorities will be paying an external company to run those processes for us. I think where we differ in Birmingham is that we're developing all of these in-house in our own sort of centre of excellence for RPA. And not only is that usually sat with IT, but in revenues, we're going to have our own developer exclusively for revenue. So that's an example, I think, of where, you know, we've been really innovative and push the boundaries. All that links back to vulnerable customers, because, you know, engaging with vulnerable customers is notoriously difficult. And, you know, we have had to make some difficult decisions in order to sort of increase our ability to do that. One example, we historically didn't send any of our council tax support debt to enforcement agents. That was a decision that the authority took five years ago in response to a Stop the Knock report, which was about having enforcement agents visiting households where children were present. The consequence of that is, our collection rate wasn't great on council tax support because, you know, we couldn't send these cases to enforcement agents to collect. But as a result, we were never getting any eyes and ears on the doorstep, which was a crucial role that enforcement agents used to carry out for us. So we've recently made a decision to reverse that decision, and we are now starting to reissue our council tax support debt to enforcement agents on the proviso that, okay, you know, ultimately we are asking them to, you know, to collect that outstanding debt. And let's not forget that 83% of our council tax support residents pay in full with no recovery action, but that remaining percentage don't. So first and foremost, you know, can we make an effort to collect? Secondly, you know, if we need to carry out a welfare visit to, you know, to try and identify any kind of vulnerability, then the enforcement agents are now there to fulfil that role for us. And when those cases are picked up, we can feedback that back into our signposting and sort of welfare channels. So that's another example. To supplement that, there's a study going on about looking at BCC bringing in house all of its enforcement agent services. So we currently use external firms, and we're exploring options around whether any in-house setup would allow us to, I'm trying to think what the best way of phrasing it is, you know, how we can tick that vulnerability identification box using our in-house enforcement agent. So there's a piece of work going on around that.
I mean, it's great to hear you talking about that and vulnerable customers, and not just supporting them, but identifying those who do need that little bit sort of extra support, different approach, and I'm sure you'll reap the rewards.
That is the real challenge, just by the very nature. You know, a lot of vulnerable citizens won't voluntarily engage with us.
Yeah.
And it is, identification takes place at a point where, you know, a complaint will come in, because you know, an individual who is, you know, vulnerable will either, you know, reach out to a family member who then engages with us, you know, or a counsellor. And it's usually at the point where we're about to do something with our, you know, recovery powers that these individuals are, you know, become known to us. And if we can deal with them at an earlier stage, then, you know, that makes the journey much more palatable for the resident.
Yeah.
It allows us to save some resource, and that, you know, we don't need to necessarily jump through all the recovery steps that we've had to. So early identification is you know, it is really important in that respect. Yeah.
Jonathan, I'm just mindful of the time, because we could talk to you for another hour easily. There's loads of good stuff that the listeners would be interested in. But the point we're talking about now, it leads quite nicely on to one of the last questions I've got, and that's councils, local authorities' approach to how they manage debt. And there's something which I'm aware of, one or two other local authorities look at, a single view of debt, which is relevant to the vulnerable customer conversation, because if you identify a vulnerable customer, say within council tax, or they've got council tax debts, is that something that's shared across other departments within the local authority, or is that something you'd be looking to do?
Single view of debt is it's like the moon on a stick for local authorities. I think that's the best way to describe it. The very nature with which local authorities work is difficult to bring everything together under a single view. Even within Birmingham, we've got our council tax, business rates, and the overpaid housing benefit on one system. We've got rent arrears, which sit on another system. We've got sundry debt and any residential charges and what have you, they sit on another system. So being able to pull together that single view is difficult. You know, you almost need a, you know, an umbrella system to sit over the top of that. I think there are a couple of applications in the market that will do some of that, but I still think it's a nut that's yet to be cracked. I think for local authorities to really, really be successful around the single view of debt, it needs to be an authority-wide initiative. And we in Birmingham have got challenges around, you know, accuracy of contact details, you know, which system holds your primary record, you know, how do you match, for example, you know, how would you match me across council tax? I might be in there as Jonathan Woodward. You know, I could be in the rent system as Mr. J. Woodward. I could be in the sundry debt system as John J.O.M. Woodward. You know, how can we match all of those together? We have got a single view of debt system within Birmingham. It's in its infancy. We've started with council tax and rent. We're at a partial view of debt stage, I think, is what I should say, not a single view of debt. And we're starting to cross match using email addresses and mobile numbers, as well as name and as postal addresses. And the thing with mobile numbers and email addresses, people just don't change them as often as they used to. I mean, certainly, you know, I remember when I was younger. You know, some of my mates are having new mobile numbers every 6 months. You know, that just doesn't happen anymore. So it's quite an effective way of tracing people across the authority. That's also a mechanism that's used on some of the wider data share pilots as part of the Digital Economy Act. So local authorities have taken part in two data shares now with HMRC and DWP to obtain trace details and employment details. So again, you know, mobile numbers, email addresses, you know, work across the piece. So that's where we're at within Birmingham. We are starting to look at wider authority records. So within the authority, we've got a data warehouse which has got financial records and customer records from a number of systems, not just those individuals with debt.
Yeah.
And the next phase is to start looking at matching our debt records against the authority's overarching records database. And I think, you know, just personally, I think for an authority to really nail their single view of debt initiative, it's almost like you need a CRM system for the authority, which will just hold all information for an individual, as well as any debts that they, you know, they may have. But then all of a sudden, you know, you're into sort of privacy notices and, you know, death by data sharing agreements and so on and so forth. And it does become quite difficult. Of course, it's okay having all of this data, but if you don't actually transfer that data into information and then do something with it, then it's pretty pointless. We're looking at using some of our information from our single view of debt, obviously, to influence the nature of the correspondence that we're going to send out to customers. So, you know, if we can see that a customer's obviously got a high number of council tax arrears, they've got rent arrears as well, and we can see that there are some other debts in other parts of the authority, you know, we will be looking to send them a reach out letter as opposed to, you know, just a hard hitting pay up. We're also looking to supplement some of our internal data that we have on customers with externals. So, you know, for example, if we've got individuals with high council tax arrears, and we can see that actually from their credit bureau data, they're paying everybody, you know, mortgages up to date. Car loans, phones, everything's in the green, everything's a zero, and yet they've got massive council tax arrears. You know, we know that actually we're just purposely not being paid. I know there are other authorities who are already doing this, and they are, you know, way out in front in this area. And the challenge for Birmingham is just doing it on mass, you know, with volume, which is, you know, that's where the challenge is sometimes.
Yeah, both Peter and I come from the financial services side, and I think that single view of debt, when you take the initial view of it seems like a no-brainer. But then when you go under the skin of the complexities within local authorities, and like you've just articulated really well there, the differences and the nuances, it's not as straightforward, but it's good that you're looking at it, I suppose. And again, it's another challenge that you've got on top of the many other challenges as head of revenues for Birmingham City Council.
Jonathan, if you could just change, if you had the power just to change one thing in your sort of in your working life, that would, I guess, you know, help you achieve what you need to do for the local authority, what would it be? Is the one thing you could say, do you know what, if I could change just one thing, it would be this?
I can think of one thing very easily. I can think of numerous things I think I would change. I'm going to probably labour a bit on council tax, actually. I think just the fundamental way in which it's billed and collected in this day and age doesn't quite work, you know. So it's a tax that is billed annually, paid monthly, accrued daily. if you were to think of it like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, we serve an annual demand in April. And, you know, customer chooses to pay by, you know, instalments. If at the moment that they miss their first payment, we send them a reminder. They don't pay, they then get a summons. Mm. And the full amount falls due. You know, and then we need to go to court to get a liability order, and then, you know, the recovery process starts. You know, that seems very draconian, you know, as a way of, you know, collecting tax. And I think at the point where you're struggling to pay, you're just going to get loaded with court costs more or less, you know, straight away.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you're on a council tax support scheme, so you're getting, you know, in Birmingham, you would get an 80% discount. You've only got a 20% charge. You know, the costs that are loaded on straight away will be, you know, potentially quite a big proportion of your debt. But that's how the regs are written. And, you know, I just think there needs to be a less autocratic, you know, approach to just, you know, summoning straight away.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's something I would fundamentally change. I think since 2013, when council tax benefit was abolished and council tax support came in, it became something of a postcode lottery. If you lived, you know, down the road in a neighbouring authority, you might get 100% council tax support and not have a bill to pay at all. You could live just up the road under a different authority's jurisdiction, and, you know, you might have a 30% charge to pay.
Right, yeah.
Because each individual authority has their own council tax support scheme. And, you know, I think that's wrong. I think there should be some, at least continuity across all local authorities in terms of council tax support. So that's something else I'd change. I think it's probably time we had some sort of revaluation for council tax. We have them for business rates every 3 years. Yeah, there's been no rebonding exercise for council tax for since the early 90s.
Yeah.
And if you think proportionally, you know, the if you're in a bank, you're in a band A, typically your council tax charge will be, you know, £1,100. Whereas if you're in the top band, and if you're in the top band, you know, your property value could be easily in the millions. Your council tax charge is going to be £3,500. You know, and again, that doesn't quite seem proportional. It could be that, you know, they could, a couple of additional bands on the top could easily fund, you know, a council tax benefit scheme at the bottom for those who are in the lower bands. So, yeah, just some of my musings on how it's council interesting. Tax could be improved.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose it's so fraught with politics, isn't it, council tax? I mean, I remember the last time a certain female prime minister tried to make some significant changes to the way, you know, what was rates when I was a kid got collected, caused a bit of furore. So
I'll take your word for that. I'm not quite that old, but I'm sure there are some of my colleagues who will remember that.
Yeah,
well, Brady asked for what one thing would you change? Jonathan's given a few there. I'm not sure who can give you the answers or solutions you want, but I've heard Rishi Sunak's an avid listener of the podcast. He might be listening. He might be able to answer a few of those for you.
You know, I actually met him.
Did you?
Yeah, three years ago. I went to the Cabinet Office for a round table discussion about thin files. For credit thin files for individuals who had got no credit footprint and therefore didn't have access to sort of cheap credit. And they were looking at using council tax payment history and rental payment history to import into the bureaus so that, yeah, some of these individuals who ordinarily had never applied for credit in their entire life but had paid their council tax, you know, every month without fail, paid their rent every month without fail, they could also get access to, you know, sort of cheap and reasonable credit. So yeah, he attended the the round table sort of session. He was a junior minister at the time, and he's had something of a meteoric rise in politics since then.
So what was he like? Did you have any indication then of what was to come? Was he
there were two things that struck me. He was absolutely pin sharp. You know, you only had to tell him something once and he understood it. And he was absolutely ripped as well. He's not a tall bloke. He was in good shape.
I believe he's about the same height as me. I'm 5'6½, I think, something like that, maybe 5'7" on a good day. I'm not sure he'd call me ripped.
genuinely nice bloke as well.
Good. Good. Yeah.
Oh, well, that'll make the snippets, I'm sure, Peter. Interesting story there. Look, Jonathan, we've run out of time. We've probably gone over, but you're our first guest from the local authority sector, and you've not disappointed. There's loads of good stuff there, so thank you for being as transparent as you have been, and I'm sure there'll be listeners where you get these perceptions of local authorities, big behemoths, and you forget there's actually people behind them who are determined to do a good job, the best job possible, and deliver the best support possible for the citizens, and you've definitely demonstrated that. So thank you for your time, and we'll get this uploaded and out to the world as soon as possible.
Yeah, thanks, Jonathan.
Not a problem. Thanks for the invite.
So that's podcast number 8 in the bag. Well done for lasting till the very end of the interview with Jonathan Woodward. We told you there'd be a bit about Rishi Sunak worth listening to. I hope you weren't disappointed. Remember to look out for podcast number 9, which we'll be recording in the next few weeks. We're not quite sure yet who from our list of experts we'll be talking to next, but whoever it is, we'll be asking them how they see digital resources being better used to help customers in financial difficulty. In the meantime, if you'd like to know a bit more about what we lovingly call debt tech, head over to trustfolio.co.uk on the World Wide Web.